It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You might be behind the wheel now as you take us along on your morning commute. Thank you for that. We look more closely now at traffic accidents and what can be done to make our streets safer. We explored the Vision Zero goal in Milwaukee over the summer, trying to get zero traffic fatalities. And we continue this conversation about reckless driving and how to make traffic flow safer. Join in with your defensive driving tips along the way, challenges that you see on the road, 800-642-1234. David Pabst is director of the Bureau of Transportation Safety and Technical Services in the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So as of yesterday, 394 people have died in traffic accidents in Wisconsin. This is slightly more than the 379 fatalities at this point last year. Why are our state's roads getting more dangerous?
Well, the roads themselves, I think, are getting better. It's the driver's behavior that is the causing the problem that we're seeing out there. People are just driving more recklessly, as you spoke earlier about, but the dangerous driving behaviors include speeding and distraction and impairment. And to top it all off, people aren't wearing their seatbelts. So when they do crash, or if when they crash, they end up getting hurt or killed.
That's surprising because there for decades has been such a push for getting people to buckle up. And you see that reversing?
Yeah, a few years ago, we got up to over 90% seatbelt use in Wisconsin. And right now, we're have preliminary numbers that show we're at 87%, 87.5% or so. And it's kind of alarming because people are wearing seatbelts less and they're driving more aggressively. It's really a recipe for disaster.
Well, when you break down the traffic fatalities, is it, older people, younger people, a mix of ages? What do you see in the numbers?
Well, what we see in the numbers is overall speeding is up, and that's really dangerous behavior. And there's a certain group, right? Young males tend to speed more than others. So that's a problematic area. And besides their speeding, they tend to drive drunk and potentially also are not wearing their seatbelts. So that young male demographic between 18 and 34 or so is a real problem for us to try to get their attention to say, hey, you're not invincible. You need to buckle up, slow down, and drive sober.
And drive sober, what about driving under the influence? Impaired drivers, is that becoming more of a problem?
Well, overall, we've done a really great job in making driving impaired. There's a social stigma to it, right? So back in the 1970s, over 60% of the crashes involved alcohol as far as fatalities go. And now we're down to about 27%. That's unacceptable, of course, but we've made huge progress. The area we're seeing increase in is the use of drugs. The use of drugs and the crashes that we're seeing is on an uptick more so than actual alcohol. But the thing is, you combine them, alcohol and drugs, and you really have a deadly combination.
Talking road safety with David Pabst here, Director of the Bureau of Transportation Safety and Technical Services at the state DOT. You can join in on what you see on the roads, 800-642-1234. Joe is joining us from Star Lake. Joe, hi, what would you like to say?
Yes, well, in fact, that comment about, you know, social mores that can play a real role, like in the terms of alcohol, not letting people leave your house drunk and driving. The cell phone use is a really tremendous factor in the increase in accidents, because when you're sitting in the car with somebody and you're talking to them, you know, so be, oh, I talk to people in the car, but they're looking, they're there with you, and cars go by fast, and sort of subconsciously everybody adjusts the conversation, they slow down. When you talk to somebody far away, they don't know what's going on, and it's distracting in a fundamental way, and it causes a lot of accidents. The issue I wanted to bring up is often it's the person at home that has to make this difficult decision, because the person in the car will call their friend or their work colleague, and they'll say, hey, you know, I got a few minutes on the road. I want to catch up with you on that thing, and you know they're on the road, and you know that's really dangerous. And, you know, but it's so rude to say, I can't talk to you. You're driving. Mm. Oh, no, I'm on the highway and I'm fine. Because they're bored and they want to get business done. But you're really lending a real force that is very dangerous. And you have to say, look, I'll talk to you when you're off the road or pull over.
Joe, you bring up such a good point about cell phone use. David Pabst, what do you see there?
Joe's absolutely correct. Using a phone, you're four times more likely to be in a crash if you're on the phone because you're cognitively distracted with a phone. Your hands are distracted and your eyes can be distracted if you're using the phone to look at the screen and whatnot. So it is really dangerous behavior. And we've seen an uptick also in the fatalities involving distraction. And it's really, really bad because we are becoming a society where you have to have that phone in your hand 24/7. Look, we just came out of the pandemic. People are used to being on their phones all the time and they're working at home or wherever they're at and they have their phones with them. And now you translate that to your commute and you're so used to having that phone in your hand, you don't even give it a second thought. But let's say you stop at a stop sign and you look at a text. You are distracted literally in your brain for 24 seconds after you look at that text. And so in that time, you can end up, you know, having the light change or maybe don't clear the intersection or look properly, and then you get involved in a crash. You really have to realize that the phone is dangerous and you need to put it down. That's why Wisconsin has started a new campaign called Buckle Up, Phone Down. We need people to start buckling up like we spoke about before, but we also need them to put the phone down, put it away, put it in a glove compartment somewhere where you're not tempted to use it. It's just so important to put your phone down while you're driving.
When you mentioned buckle up, phone down, I'm thinking about those DOT highway signs. Sometimes they're witty, but they're always noticeable. Do those signs that we see about seatbelts or distracted driving, do they make a difference in changing behavior? And by the way, who writes them?
Well, there's a whole committee in DOT that comes up with these sayings, and we're not so proud as to not borrow sayings from other states. We kind of share and whatnot. So, you know, some of the clever ones, they do create a conversation about safety. And I think it does make an impact because did you see the one about, you know, Superman wearing his belt? Well, yes, right? So you have that conversation and at least people are talking about traffic safety. And I think a little bit of humor goes a long way in that area.
Let's go to Jerry now in Appleton. Jerry, what's on your mind?
I want to build on the current conversation about distracted driving and phones. And then I have a question. So I do a lot of biking in the Appleton Fox Cities area. And when you're biking, you're more vulnerable. So you pick up on subtle cues on things. And I would say per hour of biking around town, three or four times per hour, I'll see a driver that's doing something odd, and it's pretty intuitively obvious that they're distracted in some way. And when I take a close look, almost always they're on a cell phone, texting or doing something like that. Here's my question. My car is equipped with Bluetooth, and there are controls on the steering wheel. That feels a lot safer to have a conversation on the phone using the Bluetooth. My question is it really?
Thank you for that, Jerry. David?
Well, Bluetooth are wonderful because you're not occupying your hands in the process, but there is a cognitive cost to any conversation you have on the phone, Bluetooth or not. So yes, it is somewhat safer, but I would say it's best not to have that conversation because you don't have that extra set of eyes that we talked about earlier in the car with you when you're having a regular conversation with another person in the car. And so you start focusing on the conversation and then you're not paying as well attention to driving. Driving task is the most important thing you're doing, especially with the vulnerable road users, because as a cyclist, you're right. You'll always lose in a crash and you just need to be so aware. And drivers need to be aware of bicyclists and pedestrians and motorcyclists as well.
Talking road safety, digging into the data with David Pabst, director of the Bureau of Transportation Safety and Technical Services at the state DOT. Join in with your experiences on the roads, tips that you would like to share, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how to make safer roads for all people who use them to get from one place to another. Something that sticks with me from our conversation with Caressa Givens of the Wisconsin Bike Fed. When someone says traffic deaths are inevitable, she told us you have to counter that and say, no, they are preventable.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, in 2023, we're going to have completely zero traffic deaths, but we want to tell ourselves culturally, collectively, that that is what we are here to achieve.
David Pabst heads up the Bureau of Transportation Safety and Technical Services at the State Transportation Department and stays with us. Let's bring in Mike now in Sun Prairie. Mike, what would you like to bring up?
Yeah, I was driving on the Beltline the other day, and it's like being, I don't generally, it's like being in a stock car race where the drivers are really dumb. I mean, that red X lane was red X, but it's turned into a high speed passing lane generally. I'm going to point now, it's not the highways. The highways and everything are safe. They're built wonderfully. But it's getting to the point now where I avoid the Beltline for sure. I go around the north side of Madison. And when I'm coming down around the Dells, I just cut around the back of the Dells so I don't have to get into that nasty traffic with all those exits and entrances and the high-speed driving. But
Mike,
I got a question.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Let's get to that question.
Is it safer in the great system? Is it just safer just to let the driving go, or is it safer to really do some heavy-duty enforcement?
Mike, thank you for that. David Papps, starting out with the flex lane on the Beltline in Madison. Go ahead.
Well, speeding, of course, is an age-old problem that we have, and we're working on a safe system approach, right? So you have to have safe vehicles. You have to have safe road users. So that's the behavior side of it. You have to have safe speeds, you know, design of the road, and then post-crash care. You combine all that, that's how you get from where we are to zero. It's our goal, and it's going to take a whole system. And humans are vulnerable. Humans make mistakes, and injury and death is unacceptable. But how do we get there? We can't enforce our way out of this problem. We need a cultural shift and a change in attitudes. People need to wake up and decide, you know what, 38,000, 40,000 deaths a year is unacceptable in this country. 595 in Wisconsin is unacceptable, and make really much better personal choices and decisions about driving. That includes obeying the speed, wearing your seatbelt, and not driving impaired, and putting that phone down. We are drivers that are distracted. Years ago, this country, I thought, was a country of drivers. They took pride in the fact that they could operate an automobile. It's a great piece of freedom for us. And I think right now it's kind of gone off the rails. People are driving recklessly. Speeds are, like Mike said, are really high right now. In 2019, we wrote 583 citations for 100 miles an hour or over. In 2021, it's at 1450. What is going on? We need to slow down and take a breath.
I just want you to address for a moment, though, I know it's early on with that flex lane being open. The DOT is watching it closely. What are some of the early takeaways?
I don't have any data or information, but I do know people have told me that their commute is better because there's not a slowdown. My wife takes the Beltline every day on her way to work, and she's noticed a difference in the amount of backup. So the idea is for traffic to flow, and as it flows, it's much safer.
Let's go to Joseph now in Milwaukee. Joseph, hi.
Hi. I've got a quick question for you. I heard you talking about young male drivers and how dangerous they are, but I would like to ask about elderly drivers, who I feel like are the most dangerous demographic out there. And I'm wondering if there's an age cutoff where you have to retest, or what you think about retesting at a certain age limit.
Thank you, Joseph. David.
Well, I know the DMV likes to test people when there is, you know, someone brings something to their attention. Otherwise, they have the regular every years or so, you got to get retested. And yes, age, you know, we're calling it the gray tsunami at one point. But as we get older, you'd be surprised, people start to self-limit. As you get older, your vision isn't as acute, and at night, you're uncomfortable driving, so they tend to not drive. They are much less likely to speed. They are generally are our safest. The problem is if they do get involved in a crash, they're more frail, and so that's where they can be killed or injured more seriously than, say, a young person. So age is something we do look at, but we really have to look at ability, not age, because right now they say 70 is the new 60 or whatever the current saying is, and you just have to remember it's more about the ability than the actual age.
I think you also said at night. Do most traffic fatalities occur at night or in the daytime? Is there a time of day when these deadly accidents are more prone to happen?
Well, believe it or not, many fatalities happen on a straight road in broad daylight.
Wow.
Single vehicle runoffs and whatnot. It's really surprising. And you're always, you know, aware that at night a lot of more violent crashes occur because there's alcohol involved, speed involved, and no seatbelts. So there's a lot of carnage out there 24/7. So the best thing to do is 24/7, you wear your seatbelt, you know, drive at a safe speed and do not drive impaired. And again, I can't stress this enough, put your phone down. It's a huge distraction.
Road safety on our minds with David Pabst of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, heads up the Transportation Safety and Technical Services Bureau. Let's go to Jody now in Oregon. Jody, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I understand that the DOT began a practice of putting dotted lines at the intersections, at the majority of intersections. And what I'm finding is this gives the go-ahead as a passing lane on the right, and I am seeing a lot of accidents due to this dotted line, and traffic just assumes it's okay to pass, because previously this was only used when there was an added lane or an additional space to do that passing on some of these two-way highways. But now these dotted lines at the intersections are creating a lot of accidents due to people passing on the right at these intersections, and I have a concern with that.
Jody, appreciate you bringing that up. What is going on here, David?
Quite frankly, I don't know. I'm not sure of the design that she's talking about, but I do know anytime you're passing on the right, you have to do it, you know, by law in a safe manner. So I don't see a huge red flag anywhere in that particular area. So I really can't answer that very
sure,
well.
Sure, sure. We heard from Emma in the town of Dunn, called and couldn't stay, and Emma sees a whole lot of tailgating, wants to know the best way to deal with it. Emma has put on their flashers to dissuade drivers, but that didn't work. What do you do if people are tailgating?
I think the best thing to do is if you can pull off the road in a safe place and let the tailgater pass or go at, you know, the legal speed, and that hopefully they'll find a safe place to pass themselves. It's best not to get into any kind of use of your brakes or anything like that to try to encourage people to move, because you could cause a crash yourself in that process.
Richard in Two Rivers, you also wanted to bring up tailgating. Is there something further that you can add on to tailgating?
Yeah. It's kind of my pet peeve. You know, I used to speed when I was younger, and now I don't want a speeding ticket, and I do the speed limit, and I've driven all over the country. I worked as a traveling therapist, and I worked down in Texas, Florida, Virginia, Iowa, Minnesota, and it's for some reason Wisconsin, I don't know what it is, they just, seven out of 10 people seem like they're just, well, you know, the rule of thumb, and I took a driving course when I worked for the ambulance for 3 days up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And, you know, if you're going 20 miles an hour, you stay two car lengths behind. If you're going 60, you stay six car lengths behind.
Richard, but we're short on time, and I just want David to respond here. Go ahead, David.
Tailgating is a huge problem. It's part of the aggressive driving package that we're trying to fight, you know, speeding, tailgating, distracted driving. It all comes together and makes our roads more dangerous. So again, we have to obey the law. You have to have safe following distance. 4 second rule for everything is a general rule. And he's right. There are different distances for different speeds.
David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
David Papps, Director of the Bureau of Transportation Safety and Technical Services in the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Up next, we talk traffic safety with the Police Chief of McFarland. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Transportation Department has this bulleted list of driving tips, like don't drive when you are angry, upset, or overly tired. Here's another one. Driving should not be a race unless you are driving a race car on a privately owned track. And here's one in bold. Treat others the way you would like to be treated. A little golden rule there, huh? Bring your driving advice, 800-642-1234. Aaron Chapin is McFarland Chief of Police and a police instructor at Madison College. Chief Chapin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
You've worked in law enforcement for more than two decades. You train police officers. Is driving becoming safer or more treacherous out there from your perspective?
I think we've seen a couple of trends recently that there has been an increase in dangerous driving behavior, particularly throughout 2020 when there were less people on the roads. There was less law enforcement action because agencies were concerned about officers contracting COVID and not quite sure how to address those issues. So there was less enforcement. And then I think that turned into some more dangerous driving behavior, which is carried into what we're seeing today.
You mean that people thought they could get away with going way over the speed limit? I mean, look, we're seeing tickets excess 100 miles an hour with speeding tickets way up in that category. What's going on?
I think there's a couple of things to that. I don't know that the COVID time period and the dangerous driving behavior that we saw during 2020 leads to that excessive driving behavior, but there have been things going on that we've seen where there is that excessive type of behavior. The city of Madison, Dane County Sheriff's Office, their traffic teams are out there and are seeing those cases where they're stopping people for doing 30 or 40 miles an hour over the speed limit. So I do think that there is a piece of it that people think that, or some people think that there's not a likelihood that they are going to get stopped, which could drive that behavior.
Electric cars are becoming incredibly fast, capable of going from 0 to 60 in a few seconds. Are speedier vehicles causing safety issues?
I think the thing to keep in mind is that people's behavior is the ultimate reason for that. Whether the machine is capable of doing it or not isn't driving the decision of the driver to do that. But there could be people that are choosing to do more risky behavior and engaging in that type of dangerous driving behavior.
But
I don't think it's electric cars completely or muscle cars or, you know, the type of vehicles that are out there, because there's a lot of vehicles out there that are capable of driving well over 100 miles per hour. But many drivers are choosing not to engage in that risky behavior.
A little follow-up there, though, as we talk about that, because Teslas, they come, you know, with these advanced hardware capabilities of providing autopilot and self-driving software capabilities. Are officers worried about those features, seeing, you know, as we see more and more Teslas on the road?
I think there could be a little bit of cause for concern, because you're taking the human element out of decision-making. And technology is not perfect. So that is a concern from my perspective. When I was a patrol officer, I did a lot of traffic. I'm a radar instructor, so I teach police officers how to utilize radar to stop speeders. And we know that increased speed is a significant factor in increasing the fatality risk if there is a crash that's caused. So if we're taking the human element out of vehicles and driving vehicles, that can create or could create a cause for concern. I think as technology continues to increase, that technology could get better, but the reality is that it's still technology and it can fail.
Let's bring on a caller now. Eric is with us in Stratford. Eric, hi. Eric, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Hi, yes. What are you encountering?
Well, I'm just wondering why motorists are allowed to drive with animals on their lap, their heads are hanging out the window. I mean, isn't that a form of distracted driving also?
Okay, I want to repeat that for you, Chief Chapin. People driving with their pets on their lap, animals with heads out the window, isn't that a form of distracted driving?
I think ultimately for distracted driving, for us to be able to enforce it from a law enforcement perspective, we have to be able to show that there are decisions or things that the driver is doing that does divide the attention. There are boatloads of things out there that drivers do that are dangerous. I've seen in my personal vehicle when I've been driving around, people who are putting on makeup or eating breakfast, you know, bowl of cereal as they're driving down the road, which clearly in a situation where you've got what's called divided attention, driving requires divided attention. We're doing multiple things. We're watching traffic around us. We're having to check blind spots. We're looking at mirrors. We're using our turn signal, pushing on the accelerator, steering. All of those things, there's divided attention tasks that are occurring. And if we're adding something else into the mix that's allowing us or prohibiting us from being able to make good decisions and to be able to control that vehicle safely, it could be considered distracted driving. But from an enforcement standpoint, we need to be able to show that the behavior that the driver is engaged in is truly distracted for us to be able to write a citation.
And on that laundry list of distractions in the vehicle, I would imagine smartphones are near the top of the list.
Absolutely. Yeah, the more technology that we've got in our hands, the greater the increase for potential issues related to distracted driving.
We're talking about driver safety with McFarland Police Chief Aaron Chapin. You can join in on what you've seen, tips and advice, 800-642-1234, and keeping safe behind the wheel. Let's go to Tom now in Kenosha. Tom, hi.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you.
Okay. I just had a couple points. One was, you know, to what extent do, like, car manufacturers bear responsibility for some of the excessive speeds? You know, I've seen more supercars on the road than ever in history, you know, primarily Chrysler products, although I understand Chrysler's not going to be building the Chargers and Challengers much longer. And secondly, is it because there's a paucity of driver education that may, you know, explain some of the lack of, you know, knowledgeable behavior about, you know, the rules of the road and proper etiquette?
Chief Chapin, go ahead on those two questions.
So I think vehicle manufacturers, they do things to try to be in compliance with NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, national DOT and state DOT regulations, to try to make things as safe as possible because they do have a vested interest in it, but they also have to look at their market as well. So there are competing interests there. Vehicles that are out there today have got, for instance, Teslas, other EVs, and actually not even just EVs, but you see big display screens and things like that in vehicles. The vehicle manufacturers typically will disable a bunch of the functionality of that unless the vehicle is at a stop, so that we are trying to limit the amount of distracted driving that drivers are doing. But you have to think through things like your climate controls are incorporated into that, the radio, stuff like that. So there still are things that drivers are touching and utilizing during the their trips to be able to control climate, radio, and things like that in their vehicles. So so I think that vehicle manufacturers, as much as they can, are trying to balance that.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, driver behavior is up to the person who's behind the wheel, and we need to look at that as the major factor, not necessarily the machine and blaming the machine.
Is there
the second question?
Yes. Is there anything that can be done in driver education? What needs to change there?
So I'm not sure that at the, 15 or 16 year old driver education level. And I've actually got a daughter who's just going through driver's ed right now, the fourth of my children to go through. There is a lot of talk about distracted driving, about intoxicated driving, things like that, those dangerous behaviors, things that we know increase risk. So I think driver education is trying to address that. But as we add additional instruction into driver's education, there's new technology that comes out or different statistical points and things like that. So it's a matter of trying to stay ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
quite sure what the perfect solution to that would be.
Rodney in Madison called, couldn't stay on the line. And Rodney was riding their bike, was hit by a car last week, had to go to the hospital, and noticed in the police report that the driver was not ticketed, and wants to know, is that common? What are the consequences when a driver hits a biker?
Sure. It depends on every case is different. So the officers have to look at the case, the totality of the case, and figure out what the cause is. And in some circumstances, if it's an accident that was completely out of control of either individual, sometimes that occurs. Officers typically won't issue a citation because was there a behavior that the driver did, or did the driver just not see something, and the officer could tell that the driver or the cyclist or whoever was involved in the crash is being truthful about the circumstances. Officers have discretion to choose not to issue citations. So it really depends on the particular facts of the case. And I can't speak for that particular circumstance, but I've investigated crashes in the past where I've chosen not to issue citations because of the facts that if there really is a significant contributing factor where the driver was, for instance, on their cell phone and texting, I'd write that ticket every day because that cause for that accident absolutely, can be contributed back to that. Or if it was a drunk driver, that arrest, I'm going to make that arrest every day, and I would expect that out of my team members.
We're getting safe driving tips from McFarland Police Chief Aaron Chapin with us with more than two decades of experience on the force. Join in on how you deal with scary situations on the road, what you've encountered, how you've reacted as a driver or passenger in those situations. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we get driving tips from a police chief, here are a couple more from the State Transportation Department. Relax. Take a deep breath. Getting stressed and upset will probably not get you there any faster, it says, and it might shorten your life. And go ahead and be late. It won't kill you to be 10 minutes late for an appointment. McFarland Police Chief Aaron Chapin stays with us for more tips. Chief Chapin, how can drivers stay alert and focused when there are so many distractions on the road?
That's a great question. I think one of the biggest things is to do what we can to make sure that we're limiting distractions within our vehicle. My wife and I have made intentional efforts to talk to our kids about distracted driving, and particularly in the area of cell phones. So we had a rule for our kids that if they were going to be driving, that the cell phone went in the back seat of the car so they're not tempted or they're not playing around with the cell phone instead of driving. That they would text us and say, hey, I'm leaving right here. The cell phone goes in like the pocket of the back seat or on the back seat of the car. They drive wherever they're going to go. Once they got there, they would text us, say, hey, I made it safely, and then move on. So limiting those distractions, inside your vehicle makes it much easier to pay attention to what's going on outside the vehicle and to be able to operate the vehicle in a safe and efficient manner.
I would tack on to that being a role model as the adult driver and modeling that for your kids who see how you use your phone.
Absolutely. Yeah, because do what I say and not what I do is not the way to end up showing leadership and to instill good behaviors into other individuals. We model what we see. We do the things that we see as opposed to what we hear typically.
Let's bring in Elizabeth in Milwaukee. Elizabeth, you've been driving out west. What did you encounter?
Speed limits can be 70 or 80. So if it's 80, people are driving 90, 95. If it's 70, they're driving 80, 85. So I politely go to the right, put my right turn signal on. I wave to people because I don't want to get other people agitated. I don't want to feel agitated, and I don't want to spend time with car insurance accidents. So they all zoom by. But the question on the table is, the speed limit is 70. The speed limit is 80. If you knock it down, people are going to go 10 to 15 over anyway. So why keep increasing it? Because people are just speeding 10 to 15 over. And I witnessed that within the 5,000 miles I drove. And it was concerning. And then one time, and I'm just going to make a joke, everybody goes, you know, 35, 40, and then everybody stops at the stop sign. And I asked a gentleman, I said, sir, could you let me know, are we all here to stop so that we can all go and discuss what brake shop we're going to go to get our brakes fixed? It's like, what is the point of speeding up to a red light and then stopping? You know, it doesn't make sense to me. So it's
Elizabeth, thank you for bringing your experiences. Chief McFarland, what about those speed limits as they increase?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think we see that particularly in Madison on the Beltline. You've got interstates that are around us. The interstates are at 70. People will come off the interstate onto the Beltline and still drive like at 70, but the speed limit there is 55. I think there's a handful of things that can help. I do think that enforcement is something, education and enforcement together, but enforcement is a piece of it. If people don't think that they're going to get cited, you know, and the risk of driving 7 to 10 over or 10 to 15, 15 to 20 over, if I've never been cited or never been stopped and I've driven past law enforcement, that reinforces the behavior. So doing additional enforcement, I think, is beneficial. As far as continuing to increase speed limits, we know that relative risk of fatality increases significantly as we increase the speed. We've got issues of a vehicle travel 1.1 feet per mile per hour. So a vehicle that's traveling 70 miles per hour is going to travel 77 feet per second. So it's moving pretty quickly. And we know that there's an issue with reaction time. The average human, it takes them 3/4 of a second to react to a stimulus. So as you're driving and the person brakes in front of you, for you to choose to make the decision to brake, it's at least 3/4 of a second on average for you to recognize that something has changed in your sphere and then to make the movement to change. So in 3/4 of a second, you've traveled a significant distance. And if we continue to increase those speeds, we're increasing the amount of distance a vehicle is traveling in that time. So if there's dangerous behavior going on and you don't have the time and the opportunity to change what you're doing, that creates a problem.
That math doesn't work in your favor. Let's go to Diane in Greenfield. Diane, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm having issues with when I'm either biking or walking across the pedestrian crossings. I was told by a police officer that vehicles are supposed to stop, but for the most part, none of them do. And in the area that I do want to cross, I've been noticing that let's say I'm a driver, because I also drive past that area, I'm noticing that the cars behind me are not slowing down, and I'm afraid I'm going to be rear-ended. I'm also noticing it's a two-lane road. I'm noticing the people, let's say, on my right or my left are not slowing down, so even if I stop the cars, you know, they're going to hit the biker or the walker. And another thing I've just thought about while I was waiting is at the walk signs, the same thing is happening when the walk signs, you know, turn on for the pedestrian. The
yes.
If there's a car that wants to turn right or left, they do it. And so you're kind of at the mercy of just having to watch.
Diane, thank you for that. Chief McFarland, help us out with these pedestrian-first areas.
Sure. So state law does require drivers to yield to a pedestrian who has come to a crosswalk, whether it's marked or unmarked, and they've addressed the street saying that, or they've shown intention that they're planning to cross. So vehicles are supposed to yield and can be cited. I think it is important to recognize that if somebody is in the right, so the pedestrian is right to take the crosswalk, but they're not going to win against a car if there is a collision. So the pedestrian may need to make the choice to not cross and kind of deal with that situation, but they do have, the driver needs to yield right away to pedestrian. As far as bicyclists, if a bicyclist is going to use the crosswalk, under state law, they need to do that in a manner consistent with that of a pedestrian. So popping into a crosswalk at 20 miles an hour doesn't give vehicle traffic enough time to slow down. But if the biker addresses the crosswalk the same way that a pedestrian does and then moves through the crosswalk similar to a pedestrian, they have the same rights as a pedestrian in that particular space.
Diane, thank you for the call. We also got an email from Sarah and said, you know, look, they drive in both Milwaukee and rural areas, and Sarah experiences reckless driving in both areas and says this is definitely not an issue that is exclusive to our large cities in Wisconsin. What would you say there? Because, you know, there are studies that have found most car accident fatalities happen on rural roads. Where, you know, is this a universal issue?
I do think that it is. It's not just an urban issue, a suburban issue. Most county roads, most rural roads, speed limits have a tendency to be higher, and there's usually less vehicle traffic, which there could be a potential for drivers to kind of be paying less attention because there's not as much stuff vying for their attention in that particular space. The roadways that are out in rural areas are also typically narrower, don't have as wide of a shoulder or an opportunity for a driver to have a error that can be fixed while they're traveling down the road. So I do think it is important across the state on every highway to make sure that we're driving in a respectful manner, in a safe manner, watching out for not only us but other drivers on the road.
Chief Chapin, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me this morning. This was fun.
Aaron Chapin is McFarland Chief of Police and a police instructor at Madison College. And earlier, we talked with David Pabst, who leads the traffic safety at the State Department of Transportation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.